The world leader in Internet Talk Radio. Internet Talk Radio. You're listening to America's Voice. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
You betcha. Good day, America. You're listening to Waking Up in America. We're a premier radio magazine, and we provide listeners with powerful conversations of excellence for body, mind, and spirit. So go on today and be a fly on the wall with us as we interview Olympic champion Peter Vidmar. And you're going to be hearing some very intriguing conversations here, and you can get it only here on Waking Up in America. I'm Dr. Valerie Ann Kirkgaard. I'm a mom who's played polo, firewalked, piloted planes, and carried the Olympic torch. In a similar vein, our editors and guests are people who relish living out loud and the celebration of life. Our guests say they feel honored and loved by our radio team. Bob Sercosta, who created the Home Shopping Network, says that we are doing radio which will change the world. We hope you agree. I love to interview people who bring charm, interesting points of view, and inspiration to make your life and my life easier. We like to interview the best of the best. Lisa invites you to create family structure that brings effectiveness and joy to your home. Cherie, our essential oil specialist, tells you how to feel better fast at a low cost and how to make simple changes that have impact. George will tell you about leadership stories and offer you the tools to get your results professionally and personally. And our diva Marino Queen, O'Crean, loves to bring us stories of chocolates and diva dues, and she's a wonderful way to end the show. If you happen to hear a dog barking, a telephone ringing, or an angel singing, or the wail of a fire engine, know that we call from our homes and offices all over the United States to cause this program. Right now, folks, I'm on the beach in Hawaii. Isn't that really nice? At Kolina, which actually means a place of joy. So this radio show today is being created from a place of joy. So call your friends, invite them to listen. Gail Ellen, who was on Peter Uberoff's staff in 1984, has hopped in to join us in this Olympic interview here with Peter Vidmar. I'd like you to take a moment, those of you at your computers, and go to petervidmar.com. And that's PETERVIDMAR.com. And also, check out our website, and please sign up for our mailing list so that you'll know who's coming up in the coming weeks. And if you miss anything or you want to contact somebody on the program, you can contact us by going to WakingUpInAmerica.com. Once again, that's WakingUpInAmerica.com. Or you can call us at toll-free, 866 Radio 99. So, Gail and Peter, welcome.
Thank you, Val.
Thank you. Good to be on. Yeah, I'm so pleased that you're here. Now, I actually have just been working on reading your book called Risk, Originality, and Virtuosity. And could you tell our listeners, first of all, what was it you actually did in 1984 that was so amazing? It's pretty astounding.
Well, you know, as we get older, we always get even more impressed with ourselves, I guess. But I competed back in 84 at those games in Los Angeles that Gail worked so hard on with Peter Uberoff, and was able to be a member of the U.S. men's gymnastics team, and our team won the team gold medal. That was the first gold medal we'd won in team gymnastics in 80 years. The last time was the 1904 Olympic Games, and that's when wooden club juggling, shot put, and long jump were gymnastics events. So it had been quite a long time since we'd won. And then also, I won the gold medal on the pommel horse and scored a perfect 10 in that event, and also took the silver medal in the all-around competition. That's all the events combined. I took the silver medal there.
And this is all in your book, Risk, Originality, and Virtuosity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would just, as we had talked before the show, so people know where we're coming from.
Yeah.
What you and I had said was that a 9.4 would be if you did all of your routines perfectly.
Right. Back when I was competing,
a perfect 10, what would you have to do?
Yeah, well, back when I was competing, we had certain criteria that we had to fulfill. You know, every skill had a difficulty label or level attached to it, you know, like A, B, C level skills, and you had to do a certain number of those skills. And yet, if you were to perform your routine perfectly, the highest score you could get was a 9.4. And obviously, that's not good enough. We're living in a day when, you know, 10.0 could win the gold medal at the Olympic Games. So the last 0.6 of a point to carry us from a 9.4 to the 10.0 was through fulfilling a judging category that we called ROV, and it stood for risk, originality, and virtuosity. And in essence, in my sport, those were really the keys to the perfect 10. Risk-taking meant you had to do something that was, you know, considered either dangerous or something that's very risky to do, something difficult to perform successfully in a competition, kind of go out on a limb. Originality meant you had to be original, do something new, innovative, creative, something that maybe no one else has ever done before. And then virtuosity meant that you would take a skill that maybe other people could do or have done, and you do it perfectly, you know, as good as it can be done, to the ultimate. That's virtuosity. And those are the things that really make a difference in my sport, and they actually turn out to be a very good topic for business, as I have a chance to lecture throughout the world and throughout the country. You know, we talk about these principles of taking risks, of being innovative, of perfecting your skills as a nice metaphor for the real world as well.
As you were saying, Peter, these three things, risk, originality, and virtuosity, you know, I'd like to talk to you about how we can really apply them to our daily lives and in our own environments. And you do say if you want to be at your best when it really matters, you've got to be your best every time, all the time.
You know, one of my themes that we have was always in my training with my coach was practice as if it's competition, but compete as if it's practice. What that meant was every day, what you do and how you do it matters. You know, there's no such thing as, oh, it's just another day. If I don't do well today, I'll just work hard tomorrow. And the next day comes and you don't have a good day that day, and say, oh, it's okay, I'll just work hard tomorrow. That attitude just kind of delays that pursuit of excellence. And so every day in the gym, I tried to imagine I was at the Olympic Games, that the gold medal was on the line, that I had to perform this routine perfectly to win an Olympic gold medal, even though all what it really was just another day in the gym.
Right.
But when I got to the Olympic Games, then I would think to myself, hey, it's just another day at the gym. You've been there, done that. And so it helped me to prepare for that kind of pressure. I could be in an empty gym, close my eyes, and imagine I was at the Olympic Games and feel my heart start to pound and feel that adrenaline rush through my body, even though it was just another day, because I was able to duplicate that Olympic environment just by closing my eyes and really pondering and thinking about it.
And I think sometimes, Peter, that's the distinction, handling the pressure.
Oh, I think so. I mean, because if I can really get comfortable feeling that nervous pressure, you know, get used to feeling it, maybe not comfortable, but used to feeling the pressure in every day, then when I get to the actual moment when the pressure is real and it's there, I can say, you know what, this is a familiar emotion. I know how to handle this. I can handle this. You know, and people are out there and they're making sales calls and they've got some big call to make or they've got a very important client to meet, and they practice over and over in their minds what they're going to say and how they're going to handle themselves, and then sometimes things don't go the way they wanted to handle them, and maybe they didn't prepare quite the same way and they needed to feel that pressure. And sometimes it does help to get yourself nervous, you know, place importance on every day, what you do and how you do it.
Actually, Peter, I want to give our listeners a chance to ask you a question, and we have a really great way of doing that.
Oh.
If you send an email to val@wakingupinamerica.com, I'm sitting hovered over my little computer right now, I will read your question to Peter on the air. So once again, that's val@wakingupinamerica.com. Now, I know that your coach, and I believe it's Makoto Sakamoto.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, good. My Japanese gets better by the moment.
There you go.
I think one of the things that impressed me, and I think he taught it to you, or I don't know if it's a Japanese practice or not, but it has to do with that you would put your hands to your side, and that would be like your entry into the event.
Yeah, absolutely. When I would begin my workout on the pommel horse and my workout on the rings, I would have a beginning and an end. What that meant was I would just kind of stand in front of the pommel horse, you know, just kind of tap my hands to the side, and that what that meant to me was pommel horse workout begins now, and there's nothing else you're going to think of except how to become better on this event. You're not going to think about school. You're not going to think about homework. You're not going to think about your girlfriend. You're going to think about your training and what it takes to really focus on that performance, on that routine. And then I work on the pommel horse. It might be 45 minutes, it might be an hour. And then when that's done, I clap my hands to the side and I'm done with pommel horse. I don't think about pommel horse anymore. Now I go to the rings. I think about the rings. You kind of compartmentalize these moments so you can really, really focus on what you're doing and not let your mind wander or drift, because that really does take away from productivity. There's so many distractions during the day, whether in the workplace or at home, that sometimes we just need to sink our teeth into something and not be distracted. And so this was my method of just kind of staying focused.
Oh, got it. I'm wondering, Gail, like you and I were talking beforehand, and one of the things that we mentioned was we were talking about disasters. I don't remember quite how you worded it, Gail. But what we were wondering, is there a way that as natural disasters occur in our world, is there a way that you can take these Olympic principles and bring them into managing yourself in a situation like that?
Well, are you talking to me then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you meant Gail. Well, yeah, I mean, certainly there are some things that are beyond our control. And we look at the horrible damage and devastation from the hurricane in Mississippi, or you look at earthquake damages or tsunamis, and there are things that are beyond our control, and that's where people need help. Where we that have much must do what we can to help those that have little. And for those that are in a difficult situation, I've never had to suffer like many people have. I just know that I always try to keep focused on what was the light at the end of the tunnel? Where would I like to be a year from now, 2 years from now, six
exactly.
months from now? And keep focused on that objective and then ask, are there things I'm doing today that are going to help me to get there? Are there things I'm doing that are going to benefit me for my future? And let's focus and get on them right now. And that would help me. That would help me. Certainly, I haven't had to face the kind of devastation many people do. But we'd have to say, I just hope that I'd be able to deal with these things and be able to kind of treat life the way I would treat my training for the Olympic Games and really stay focused and look at the big picture.
That's it, the big picture and focus. Peter, I just want to segue just for a second again, because this area of coaching, you know, I have tremendous respect for the dedicated coaches in our country, because
mm-hmm.
they really aren't in it for the big bucks, and
sure.
they care about young people and helping them reach their dreams, and I know your coaches did that. And then at the same time, Peter, I wonder if you'd comment on this whole idea of teamwork, you know, because there you were competing with your team
mm-hmm.
and simultaneously really against them individually.
Yeah, well, first of all, from a coaching standpoint, I had a fantastic coach. His name was Makoto Sakamoto, probably the finest coach in the sport that I could have had for me. And, he always filled my mind with stories of great moments, you know, the Olympic Games or the World Championships. And he would teach me by telling me stories about other athletes and what they were able to do. And that was just so exciting for me to hear these stories, that becoming an Olympian was kind of a romantic quest for me. I wanted to have people tell stories about me.
Right.
And so he never really had to discipline me. He would just, you know, motivate me by telling me a story. Oh, let me tell you about this athlete that did this. And I think, oh, I want to be that tough. I want to be that strong. I want to be that good under pressure. And so he really filled my mind with this dream and this vision of what I could become. And then the teamwork is interesting in my sport, because, you know, as you said, it's you've got a team of maybe six gymnasts, but all you're out there is doing your own individual performances. It's a team sport, but it's based on collective individual performances. And so sometimes you can say, well, gee, Peter, all you have to really worry about is yourself. You know, you go out there and get a 10, and that's what's best for the team. And Tim Daggett, you go out there and get a 10, that's what's best for the team. You two guys could hate each other. It doesn't matter. And yet, if I'm going to spend 6 hours a day in a gym with someone that I can't get along with, or that I can't work together with, or that I can't pull resources with, is that going to affect my performance as an individual? It's going to make a big difference.
Right.
And so we pooled our resources every day in the gym. I knew I could depend on Mitch Gaylord to help me out. I could depend on Tim Daggett to help me out. And that made a really big difference for us, because we pooled our resources in the gym, and it made us better individuals at what we did.
Yes.
It helped us then as a group to rise above others.
You know, I have an email that just came in, and it's from
mm-hmm.
Esther.
Mm-hmm.
And Esther wants to know if you were ever in any other Olympics.
You know, I was on the 1980 Olympic team that had to boycott those games. So I made my first Olympic team just after my freshman year in college at UCLA. And yet, as you know, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan at the time, and President Carter didn't think it was appropriate for American athletes to compete in Moscow at those games while they were at war, so he would not allow us to go. So I didn't get a chance to compete in those games, but I continued on and trained for four more years and competed, of course, in 1984 in Los Angeles. So I was on two Olympic teams, but only competed in one Olympic Games.
Now, I'm looking at, when I read your book,
mm-hmm.
I was astounded to hear about Nadia Comăneci?
Yeah, Nadia Comăneci, probably the greatest gymnast that ever lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could you just let our listeners know what she did?
Well, I mean, Nadia was really the first person to break through that barrier and score tens in international competition. She scored 7 perfect tens at the Olympic Games in Montreal. And in fact, it was so unheard of for a gymnast to score a 10 that the scoreboard was incapable of flashing a 10.
Hmm.
It could only go, it could go up to a 9.9, but there wasn't an extra decimal point, so it couldn't go either side, so it showed up as a 1. But the audience, of course, knew that that meant she had scored a 10. And she kind of opened this thought or this possibility that, wow, maybe a 10 is possible in gymnastics.
Well, as part of that, mm-hmm. that part of that question, what I'm looking at is, what is it that allows
mm-hmm.
somebody, you know, for years and years and years, nobody broke the 4-minute mile.
Right, exactly.
For years and years and years, nobody ever did a perfect 10.
Right.
And then as soon as somebody starts doing it, that other people start doing it. How do you explain that?
Well, you know, it's we all have this mindset. I mean, and that's actually in my book, as I tell the story of Roger Bannister, who was the first person to break the 4-minute mile barrier. You know, it was generally thought impossible to do. And then when he broke it, within 1 year, many, many people broke the 4-minute mile barrier. And I think their thought was, well, Roger did it? Well, I can run as fast as Roger. Well, I'm going to do it too. And then they went out and did it because they just didn't think it was possible, and they never really gave it that kind of an effort that would give them that sub-4-minute mile mark. And yet it was amazing how many people did that right after it had been done. Now, certainly a subjective sport like gymnastics, I mean, if judges decide to loosen up in their scoring, well, then they can give out tens. It doesn't mean that the actual performance was perfect. And there were probably too many tens given in the Olympic Games that I competed in. And as a result, they made the rules tighter. And then all of a sudden, you haven't seen a 10 for about 20 years in gymnastics. Mm. So it's almost impossible now to get a 10. But things that can be measured empirically, you look at the 4-minute mile barrier and see how many people can do it now. It takes one pioneer to show the world what can be done, and then people follow. And the whole key is, you know, are you going to be the pioneer, or are you just going to follow?
Well, you put your finger right on the pulse of it, Peter, this idea of possibility thinking. I remember once you were asked, in your opinion, what does it take to be an Olympic athlete, Peter? And I remember you saying, hard work, desire, luck. Great coaching, hard work, desire, luck, great coaching.
Yeah, there's just too many things. The other thing is for me, of course, was being able to give that little extra effort each day. Not a monumental effort one day, but little extra efforts every day, because they add up and they do make a big difference over the long haul.
Right, and there's no magic formula.
There's no magic formula. It's I spend a lot of hours in the gym. Let me tell you one thing that was important for me was I tried to kind of be the last person out of the gym for me.
Yeah.
You know, give it a few more minutes every day.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot when I talk to corporations. I talk a lot about this little extra effort, because when you look at the results of any Olympic Games in the last 108 years, you realize that people don't win by running twice as fast or jumping twice as far or scoring twice as many points. They win by fractions of a second or an inch or a point.
Yeah.
And so you take all these athletes and put them back onto their bicycle or the pool or onto that track for all that training time before the games and ask, well, for them to be the best, did they work twice as hard as the rest? And that's impossible, too. You simply can't work twice as hard. And let me give you one quick example that illustrates this. And this is actually in my book, but in Sports Illustrated, the late George Plimpton wrote an article about a phenomenal new rookie baseball player whose name was Hayden Sid Finch, and he played for the New York Mets. Sid was a pitcher who could throw a baseball 168 miles an hour. That's a third faster, 30% faster than anybody in the major leagues. A third faster, in fact, than anybody had ever thrown a baseball in history. So Plimpton reported that he was proving to be completely unhittable in spring training. The Mets' best hitters were going up to the plate, and they weren't even swinging until the ball was already in the catcher's mitt. Mm-hmm. And so he wrote something like, I think he said something like, it's possible that an absolute superstar is coming into baseball. So remarkable, he said, that the delicate balance between pitcher and hitter could be turned into disarray. He may well change the course of baseball history. That's what he wrote about this article.
Mm-hmm.
And they had pictures of Sid Finch in there, and just fascinating. And it's, and you know, Sid Finch and that 168-mile-per-hour fastball, that may have indeed changed the course of baseball history, except for one little detail, and that's that Sid Finch, did not exist. Because Plimpton's article appeared in the April 1st edition of Sports Illustrated. He made the whole thing up. It was just a big April Fool's joke, which the magazine revealed in its following issue. You know, there was no phenomenon, no guy named Sid Finch. You know, the Mets weren't shoo-ins for the pennant in the World Series. The joke was on the readers. And so, but think about this, though. The possibility was pretty intriguing. You know, what if a person really could perform a third above the rest? What would be the impact? You know, that performer could really change the course of history in sports or business or whatever. But in the normal scheme of things in life, it doesn't work that way. You know, we can't throw twice as hard or twice as fast or even a third as fast as everyone else or jump twice as high or even a third as high as everybody else, a third higher. You know, we can't work twice as hard either, but we can always work a little bit harder, a little bit smarter. And that was my theme in my training, to work 15 more minutes a day, to work a little bit extra on this skill or on that skill. So when the games came, when the Olympic Games came, I could say, you know what? I've given the extra effort. I've done all I can do. I've got no reason to fear. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to hit my routines. And that's what I was able to do.
Well, when you take a look at originality and risk, just those two, I would have to say what Sir Edmund Hillary did was an example of those. I mean, he took a look at Mount Everest, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he saw something, like he saw another path
right,
that nobody had seen before. That didn't have anything to do with anything other than the way he chose to view the situation. I was snorkeling once, and I had no mask. And when I went under the water, I saw like five or six kinds of fish, you know, black and green and whatever. A friend offered me the mask.
Right.
As soon as I put the mask on, I saw, it was like magic.
You saw a city of fish.
There were 20 kinds of fish under there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what kind of goggles are you wearing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's and with Edmund Hillary, I mean, he basically got, there was a certain point towards the peak of Everest that climbers just simply couldn't get around. He studied it. He figured out a way to go around this. And now this to this day, that it's called the Hillary Step. It's a very difficult, outcropping of rock right before the summit of Everest. And he was the first to figure out a way to get around it. That brought him to the summit.
But how many have done it since him now?
Oh, I think this last season, I think there was a day where, 30 or 40 or 50 people made it to the top in one day because the weather was perfect and everybody got up and got down safely. So it doesn't mean it's not a dangerous thing to do. Climbing Everest can be immensely dangerous, as you saw about that catastrophe back in 1996. But Edmund Hillary was the one, he was the pioneer, he was the one that showed that it could be done. And then everybody followed afterwards.
Well, what I'd like to do is actually have Gail ask you a last question, and then I'd like to see if any of the teammates would like to say something to you before we sign off, because I just want to keep you. But
oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Peter, I just really wanted to say thank you. It has been a pleasure to be with you today, and really just to thank you for improving morale wherever you go and encouraging new ways of thinking. And I just really wanted to say thank you for being a true champion.
Well, thank you. And we were a part of history together, actually.
We were.
Gail, as you worked on those games in 84, those were probably the most successful games in Olympics history, and you were a part of that. So
I got to carry the torch. So it's like there's a special bond here between us. And what we want to do, Peter, is actually Gail and I are going to be creating an album.
Oh, wow.
Of Olympic champions, and we're going to include you in it.
Wonderful.
So it's because your guys are so inspirational. So do George or Maureen or Cherie or Lisa have a question for Peter?
I do. It's Lisa. I just got here, caught the tail end. I'm on the road, so sorry, Peter, I didn't get the whole thing, but I caught the tail end about the Mount Everest piece. And the question I have for you is, I'm sure you're speaking to different organizations and groups now, business. Have you gotten any response from those people and do you have any examples of businesses that have taken this inspiration that you've given them and done something with it?
Well, I had one company, a large pharmaceutical company that I spoke for, and after I spoke about my concept of risk, originality, and virtuosity, they created a program, a sales campaign for them, an internal campaign, called ROVE, and it stood for Risk, Originality, Virtuosity Every Day. And they had their sales force report back and log where each day, where they kind of went on a limb and kind of pushed the envelope, where they took a risk, where they were different, where they were innovative in a sales approach, for example, or where they showed virtuosity, really, really giving terrific customer service, and how they were able to do that every day. and see if that made a difference in their sales. And then I came back for this company, and they surprised me by saying, hey, we're giving out the ROVE award today. And I said, what are you talking about? They said, no, it's the ROVE award. I said, well, what is it? It's all patterned after your speech, and so we'd like you to present it to our salesmen that most fit into that into the criteria for the award. And so I presented the ROVE award to their top salesmen. So that was pretty exciting.
Wow, I love it. Can you tell us the name?
You know, well, it's actually, they've since merged into, they're part of a larger pharmaceutical company, Bristol-Myers Squibb now, but it was Squibb many years ago, so it was exciting.
Wow, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And George,
and Val, this is George.
Go for it, George.
Hey, George.
And I have a quick question, Peter.
Thank
you. Talk to us about one other thing that your coach did besides telling you stories that helped create the environment that brought out your best.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, the stories were always motivating, but I think it wasn't so much what he would tell me, but it was what he would show me. Not that he was a great gymnast. He was a great gymnast. He was an Olympian himself. But he was always there. I mean, he never said, okay, I really want you to work hard this week, but I'm going to be on a vacation. I'll be back in a week, or I'll be back in 2 weeks, or I've got another trip I've got to take, or I won't be able to be into the gym today. He was there every day, 6 days a week for 12 years. You know, and one time, you know, he says, well, you know, I've always wanted to go see Yellowstone. And I'm at UCLA. I said to my coach, Marco, just go to Yellowstone. He goes, no, we got to train. I said, no, go. Anyways, he says, no, we got to train. Well, all of a sudden, he comes in Monday morning for workout, or Monday afternoon. He says, hey, I went to Yellowstone. I said, what do you mean you went to Yellowstone? When? He goes, oh, I went to Yellowstone. When? He says, over the weekend. What do you mean you went to Yellowstone? He goes, yeah, I got in the car, put my kids in the car, and we drove to Yellowstone. Well, I drove around the park and drove back. This is from Los Angeles to Yellowstone Park and back, you know, leaving on, I guess, after working on Friday night, he took off. I went to train. I always train at another gym on Saturdays. And in two and a half days, he went to Yellowstone, saw the park, came back, but made it back in time for workout at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You know, he was always there for me. And how could I not give my best effort for someone that's willing to put in like that? I mean, he led by example. He put his heart and soul into all of our training. And, you know, I can't repay that, you know, other than just to give my best effort every day for him because he was such a remarkable human being.
Sheree, do you have a question? I guess not. Peter, thank you very much. And go to petervidmar.com. And you can book Peter for speaking engagements. You can find out his history. You can, it's wonderful. You can order his book. So thank you very, very much.
Dr. Val? This is Sheree.
This is Sheree, by the way, Peter.
Yes.
Hi. I do have one quick question for Peter.
Yes.
If it's okay. The question that I have for you is, when you run into someone who normally, you know, has the intention of doing a really good job at whatever their situation is, but say they get into a self-defeating attitude,
mm-hmm.
What would you say to them? How would you work with them to get them through that?
Well, I guess the one thing is to realize that all good things take time. And too often what we want is we want quick results. We want to see right away, once we put forth a little bit of effort, we want to see that effort is paying off. And sometimes it doesn't pay off immediately. It may not pay off for days or for weeks or even months. You know, I had a skill that I had to learn at the Olympic Games. It was the high bar compulsory dismount. And I spent years on that stupid trick. I just didn't understand it. But by the time the games rolled around, I was able to at least do it, you know, as good as I could do it, and I almost got a perfect score on that compulsory routine. I got a 9.95, I think. And so the main thing is just to stay the course. Now, certainly some things have to change. Maybe there's behaviors that are preventing us from really reaching our goals, and we have to really sit down and think about what they are. But, you know, I would always sit down with my coach and map out my training plan and stick with it. And it is. It can be self-defeating if you let it get that way. But always keep in mind, what is it that I'm here for? What is it that I'm training for? Is that effort worth working for right now? Catch the vision of what you want to do, where you want to be, whether it's 6 months down the road or 6 years down the road, and ask yourself, is that worth working for right now? And if I could get a clear vision of what it would be like to stand on the victory platform, to have that metal placed around my neck, and say to yourself, Peter, is it worth it? Is it worth it right now? You're tired, you're beat, you want to go home, you tore 3 blisters in your hand, your shoulders hurt, your ankles are swollen, but is that gold medal still worth it? And to me, the answer was always, yeah, it's still worth it, so I'm going to keep on training.
That's fabulous, Peter. Go go to petervidmar.com. We'll see if we can get this guy back in the future for more. We only scratch the surface of what's going on here, and I think the companies that get you are extraordinarily lucky, sir.
So, well, I have a lot of fun. Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. Visit our website at wakingupinamerica.com. Esther, I hope you got your question answered to your satisfaction. Call us at toll-free 866-RADIO-99 for more information. And while you're at the website, sign up to be on our mailing list, and we'll be sending you the next week's guest, and you'll know what's happening, and you'll be in the know here at Waking Up in America. You heard Lisa talking. Lisa's actually the person in charge of family for this radio show, and she's a Yurok Indian, the mother of six, and she's worked with just about every situation that you can imagine inside a family. And Lisa, the next 4 minutes are yours.
Oh, thank you. Well, today I wanted to talk about preparing your family for catastrophe. I think with the events going on in New Orleans and Louisiana, my heart goes out to those people, and wherever we can all help, it's good to lend a hand. And for right now, I just wanted to share with you the importance of having your own evacuation plan in your own home. Sometimes we don't even think about that. I was just at a casino the other day, and I work in that industry, and I actually saw an evacuation plan put on the wall, you know, in case of emergency. But how prepared are we for an emergency or some type of catastrophic event? So one thing to do is to sit down with your family and create an evacuation plan. If there is some type of some event, that whether it's in our neck of the woods we have tornadoes, but even if there's a fire in the home or even a prowler or somebody that comes into your home, it's always good to be prepared. Phone numbers and how to communicate with one another. Have a centralized place where everybody would meet if there was an event that occurred, and as well as backup, as a backup. So, and other things to have as well is things in your car. Make sure your car is filled up with gas. You know, make sure you have cash on hand that you can grab to take with you, because if there is an event, usually everything skyrockets to the roof and the banks are closed down. You can't get access to any money, so having a bank card is not going to help you, even a credit card. None of those systems, all those systems are going to be down, so cash is going to be king in those types of situations. And it's always good, even with, you know, in my car, to have a blanket, water, extra food, things of that nature, just hanging around, because you never know if you're going to get broken down. And I know last year there was a couple that died in a car because it was cold, and they got their car broke down along the road. It was freezing, and they didn't have anything to keep them warm. There's no food and water in their car. So little things like that. So, as from family matters, you just want to make sure that in even food, even if there's a time of, you know, the saving money, having a couple of months, you know, saved up in one of your bank accounts and food supplies. My church teaches 2-year supply, you know, gas, water, and food supplies, so that you can be self-sufficient in the event. Batteries, radios at home that you can use to catch up on what's going on with the news if you don't have electricity. Things with that is just making sure that you are prepared yourself and teaching your kids to do the same thing. This is Lisa Malson with Family Matters. I hope that that when the time comes, you are prepared. So thank
Give
you.
Give me a new tagline.
I can't even remember my, what is it?
Let's see if I can remember your new tagline.
She made me do a tagline. I can't even remember it.
Right.
Well, I'm on the road.
It's like, if you help your family, you're helping
world.
Our world.
Yep. Right.
And I like
exactly.
that. As we strengthen our family, we strengthen our world.
Right. There you go. That's
pretty much like
I'm
that,
working
lady.
On my tagline here.
You said it. I loved it. Thank you so much, sweetie.
Thanks.
Next up, we have Cherie Ross. And Cherie, wasn't he something remarkable?
Oh, Peter's fantastic. That mindset is amazing, and he is undeterrable.
He is. And, you know, one of the things that's come up, and I don't know if Gail is still on or not, but one of the things that's come up as we've interviewed all of these Olympic champions, they've all had strong support and or family.
Yes.
But most of them have strong families. So
right.
Whatever we can do to help make the family strong. Cherie actually is about making the individual strong, and she uses essential oils to do that. And I've had some remarkable experiences.
Oh, yeah.
So today we are going to talk about a couple of oils. One in particular is Believe oil. It is the name Believe because of what it does with oneself. And it fits in, it works with self-confidence, it works with your sense of self, your value, your self-esteem, and it also works with helping you to feel safe and secure within yourself. And right now that it definitely fits for what's going on with the crisis that has happened because of the hurricane, but it also helps to fit with what Peter was mentioning, because if you do not believe in yourself, if you don't believe that something is possible, you're never going to manifest it, or it will be a lot harder. And so, because, you know, what you believe shall come upon you. And so Believe oil is made up of frankincense, it's made up of Idaho balsam fir, and it is made up of rosewood. Now, frankincense is known as the eternal healer of the mind, because what frankincense does is it assists us, it helps us to feel protected, but it assists us in restoring our life force or a vital live cell activity in our body. So it literally strengthens our desire and our will to live. And I don't just mean, you know, live as in, yeah, I'll get through the day, but I mean live as in have enough energy, have aspirations, have enthusiasm, have something that you're excited and passionate about and that you can commit to it and you can actually see yourself or believe yourself that you deserve it and that you're capable of that. Frankincense works tremendously with depression and just many, many other things, respiratory concerns clearly. It's also, by the way, one of the top oils that's been tested time and time again to be over 99% effective against multiple types of cancers. Dr. Val, if I can get one of them to not be so shy, one of my many cancer survivors I would like to have on the radio.
That would be a good idea.
To be interviewed sometime. Yeah.
And you've done it 4 times, right?
Three.
Oh, three?
Yeah. That's enough, though.
But they were all different kinds of cancer, weren't they, Cherie?
Yes. Yeah, first time was in my glands, my parotid glands, and I caught it early. Second time was stomach and intestinal, and third time was uterine, breast, and brain. And all three were different. None were related, so it didn't get... didn't go into remission and come back. They're all very different. I'm an anomaly. University of Minnesota says I'm a very strange anomaly. But
I was wondering if you've been given these tests in so many fields so that you could be the answer for people.
You know, I don't know. All I know is I'm grateful because I did use holistic methods all three times, and all three times I did get cancer-free very, very quickly and actually was healthier coming out of it.
I don't mean to say this, but in hindsight, I hope you understand. I think it's pretty amazing that you were rolled on by a horse and handled that holistically, too.
Yeah, 1,800 pounds on top of you, that's a little tough thing, yeah. So, and then the next oil, and by the way, frankincense also is excellent in dealing with inflammation and bone density issues. So let's go to rosewood. Rosewood is exquisite in balancing both hemispheres of the brain, absolutely exquisite. And it's also very good against gram-negative and gram-positive bacteria for very close to 100% effectiveness in annihilating it. And then we have Idaho balsam fir, which to me is one of the most amazing oils because it, between that and frankincense, it's hard to pick which one knocks depression on its tail. It knocks the I can't do it attitude out of sight. You feel calm, you feel steady emotionally, because what it does, it's the number one oil that pulls the cortisol levels out of the body. Idaho balsam fir. It literally pulls high cortisol levels, which is the stress hormone, which, by the way, is also the hormone that allows you to gain weight in the midsection and not be able to lose it. It's also, by the way, the hormone that stops you from sleeping through the night. So and it also is the hormone that creates a serious condition of acid and is responsible as a huge contributing factor to autoimmune diseases and fibromyalgia.
So what would you put with, now this is Idaho balsam, right?
Idaho balsam fir, yeah.
Now, we were talking about putting together a stress pack.
Yeah, this would be one of my main oils, Idaho balsam fir.
And would there be anything else that goes with it?
Oh, yeah. There's an oil I have called Peace and Calming. I would do some of the Lycium barbarum, the Ninsha. The Ninsha wolfberry is absolutely powerful. And so for stress, and then I'd also do an oil called Valor. But, you know, one of the things I want to share with you, these oils work so phenomenally well. This weekend I was up in Montana, way up in Eureka, which is 4 miles from the Canadian border. And my husband had a very, very bad bee sting. A wasp came and stung him, and he reacts highly to it. He swells up. He's not allergic to them, but he has extreme reactions.
Well, I had my purse with me, and I just pulled out my bottle of Believe Oil because I carry that with me wherever I go, and I put 3 drops of it on, and literally in less than 1 minute, the welt was gone, the swelling left his hand, and it was no longer red in 1 minute's time, maybe less.
And that was Believe?
Believe Oil because of the frankincense, the Idaho balsam fir, and the rosewood.
Huh.
And so there's an oil that is Believe. It is absolutely a fantastic oil. It's very inexpensive. You can get your hands on it for around $15. And it works emotionally, it works physically for many, many aspects of you, and it also assists you in feeling calm and serene. You know, this morning, I don't know if y'all are aware, but Maureen, our wonderful diva, we have a morning call, and she said a prayer for us and so that we get in alignment and support all of our listeners to the highest of what they would benefit them each time we speak on the radio. And one of the things that she said was, please guide us and instill in us and those who've been affected by this tragedy, the peace that passes all understanding of humanness. And that is what this oil assists you in feeling, that deep inner sense of peace. And so I am. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like to learn more about how these oils can help you physically, emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, give me a call at toll-free 866-RADIO-99 or heavenincorporated.com or young-living.net. Get a hold of me.
There you go. Toll-free 866-RADIO-99. Go to the website, sign up for our mailing list, and find out about these incredible people that are coming. All you do is fill it out, and each week we'll send you a little broadcast giving you an update on who the guest is. While you're there, check out the website. Those oils she's talking about, I have a commitment to get those little packages of what she's talking about into the store. We've got a few items in the store right now, and we're building. So we'd love to have you come and visit and give us your comments. And who's up next is George Rucheski. And George, you heard him speaking earlier in the show. He brings leadership into companies and homes, and he gives us tips and ideas on how to make that happen. Take it away, George.
Thank you, Val. As I listened to Peter today, and as I was reflecting on the damage that's been done in the Gulf area through the hurricanes, how does this really apply to leaders? Well, you know, tough times happen. It's a part of life. And true leaders are able to address those tough times in a way that helps people take helpful actions. Because when we're focused on the past, what's already happened, we're trapped. It's like an anchor. We can't move. If we think about the future and are uncertain about what's going to happen, then we are trapped by that fear, that anxiety, which means we have to live in the moment. Well, how do true leaders live in the moment and help others live in the moment so that we can take positive action to make progress? Well, the first way is they carry their own weather. It doesn't really matter what happens around us. What matters is how we believe our circumstances to be. Well, a true leader always sees good weather. They're always in a good weather mood because it's about, you know, it doesn't matter what's happening around us. I have to choose to take action. Well, as Peter said, if we believe it's not possible, we don't even try. Well, true leaders are there thinking and asking the question, let's find a way that works for us. Let's find a way that works for you. Let's find a way to make progress rather than find a way out, find a way to give up. So it's always about if we take an action, and you know you can't climb the mountain until you take the first step. You can't get better at anything without trying it to begin with. And it is that let's find a way that works for us and let's keep moving forward. And the third piece, and it's something that is so important, and as we listen to Peter talk about his coach, you see, a true leader celebrates others' successes. They don't focus on themselves. They're not saying, oh, I'm a great person and I get all the credit for all this good stuff that happens. They regularly recognize and celebrate the successes of others because it's through our collective efforts that we're able to make a true, huge difference in the world. And that's what leadership is about, being able to invite the best of everybody and then put them together in a collective effort that really does create true excellence. And it was that, as I listened to the virtuosity, originality, and risk, I realized that our book, True Leaders, has those principles as part of our research base when we interviewed the leaders about what led to the successes. And interestingly, when we asked them about success, they almost invariably shared a story about someone else in their organization. It wasn't about them, it was about the other folks. But they talked about virtuosity as excellence, that pursuit of excellence, and you only get better, you only approach excellence if you're working on something every day. Originality is the innovation, the ability to create something new, and it isn't just a brand new idea, but it's taking something that you learned about in one area and applying it in another, and it creates great outcomes. And finally, we talked about risk as risk is to respond and grow. It's how we get out of our comfort zone and into our learning zone. So when we're stretching to do something riskier because we haven't done it before, it's also where we learn new things. So being of service to others is a great thing, and each of us now can do something to help what's just happened with the hurricane. We can pray. Doesn't cost a thing. It does work. We can send money because money will be needed. If we have time, we can go and be of service. We can encourage others to give from what they have to support those who have been so impacted. And in each of the tragedies, each of the challenges, you'll see folks reaching out to each other, building that relationship connection. And that's really what true leadership is about. It's when we're focused on accomplishing something that makes a true difference rather than just focusing on a task. Today's segment has been brought to you by True Leader Coach, Inc. We welcome your call at 877-321-4852 for a free consultation on helping you make progress in your life. That's 877-321-4TLC. And as we say in our business, share some tender loving care with each person who crosses your path today.
And if you want to meet George in person, thanks, George. If you want to meet him in person, go to our website. Well, it's a replica of his person. You can see George there on the website. You can sign up for our mailing list. And you can call us also at toll-free 866-RADIO-99. Once again, toll-free 866-RADIO-99. Well, this is Dr. Val. As Peter was talking today about what it was like training for the Olympics and so on and so forth, I, in my own way, trained to carry the Olympic torch. And my idea of training back in 1984 was to go to the Sizzler and eat salads and to get healthy. And that was my perspective of it. And at the time, I was able to kind of walk around the block once. And here I was going to be carrying the Olympic torch, and I wanted to be doing a good job of it. So being at the Sizzler was part of my training. And while I was there, I was eating my lunch one day, and somebody came with their tray, and they bumped into my table, and they knocked it all over the floor. And the manager of the Sizzler came over and helped me pick up things and apologized to me and actually told me to get another plate full, and I did that. I got more salad, and I got more iced tea, and I sat down again, and a place that I'd often sat at, I'd never been run into before, and sure enough, a second person comes and knocks my stuff all over the floor. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, once could have been an accident, but twice has got to be a message. So I'm trying to figure out what that message could possibly be, and the manager is kind of looking at me like, we're going, what's happening here? And he helps me load up things again, puts them on the table, gets me another cup of tea, and I'm just good. Okay, what is the message here? What is the message? What is the message? When a third person comes, sits the table, and knocks everything all over the floor, and I don't know what it is, and I'm thinking, and all of a sudden I start to think, you know, it's not what I'm thinking here. It's like, what results am I producing in my life? Okay, by what I'm doing, I'm sitting here, what results am I producing? And I realized that what I was producing, if you took a look at it, was a combination of generosity, like the manager keep replenishing the food. But the thing that I was really producing was apology. And people were apologizing profusely all over the place, and I started to laugh, and I just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed, because what had happened about two or three nights before, and I don't quite remember what the issue was, but I remember standing on the deck of my home, raising my fist toward heaven and telling God that God owed me an apology. And in that moment, I started to laugh because I realized that what I had gotten was a profound apology. And the moment I understood the relationship between the request and the apology, I on the screen, sometimes they have this thing you call the screen, I'm looking at the screen of my life, and I can see that we're all a human body and that we're blood cells and that all of us are related. And I could see this entire, I could see all the blood cells inside the human body and the relationship of them. And I understood in that moment profoundly that as we are here talking on the radio today, that part of our bodies in different parts of the world, there's been this tsunami, there's been the disaster in New Orleans, there's been 600 or 700 people have died today in Baghdad. It's like we need to be praying, as George was talking about, and we need to be honoring our body, and we need to know, as I know profoundly from that incident, that we're all related. And with that, I will turn you over to the diva, who, and the diva is having her own remarkable experiences with her son in football. So take it away, diva.
Thank you so much. I hope you're enjoying Hawaii, Val.
I am.
Good. Well, this is Maureen O'Crean with DistinctivelyDiva.com, and we're going to talk about a subject that many people are well aware of today, and that topic is safety. Our thoughts and our prayers go out to everyone who has been impacted by Hurricane Katrina, and please send any requests for aid to val@wakingupinamerica.com, and we will spread the word to the divas and share the needs with others. We do have some women that are in the area, and we offer our prayers to them. And, of course, the phones aren't working, so we just keep everyone surrounded in safety and light. But how do we feel safe in such an unpredictable world? As women, we need to feel safe in order to give our all. Often, we think that that safety comes from something outside of us. I'd like to pose the opposite to you today and say, safety comes from within. It's time to trust yourself and to release your intuition. That is the key to feeling safe. When you know that your judgment is right on, you can feel it. The first step in opening up your intuition is clarity. And the first step to clarity is order. Today, pick a place in your environment that needs to be cleaned and ordered. Commit to that space, be it a tabletop or a square foot of floor space. Clean it, sparkle it, and make it shine. Now, here's the trick. You have to honor it. For when you can honor that space, you are honoring yourself. And when you feel that honor, you trust yourself. And when you can trust yourself, you are safe. So let's create a world where all women are safe. And like everything in life, it always begins with ourselves. So I encourage you to reach out and help anyone who crosses your path today. Make a donation to those who don't feel safe with Hurricane Katrina, to any one of the wonderful agencies that are providing help right now, and start to create safety in your own world. And start with just a little corner. This is Maureen O'Crean for DistinctivelyDiva.com, an international online community of women for women. Please sign up for our free newsletter at DistinctivelyDiva.com. And you can reach any of the editors at Waking Up in America by emailing val@wakingupinamerica.com or calling us toll-free at 866 Radio 99.
You know, Maureen, I was thinking, yeah, I like what you were talking about a lot, about the safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had that accident in my Jeep about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And what I'd been working really hard getting my house in order. And I remember when I lost control of the Jeep, you know, the braking system in it, and I started going down the mountain backwards, that I automatically did the right thing.
Yeah, it's fabulous, huh?
Okay, and that was yaha number one. Okay, thank God you did the right thing, because if you didn't, somebody else would be doing Waking Up in America today, right? But the second part of it was, when the Jeep started to almost tip over,
uh-huh,
I felt safe. This voice inside of my head said, this isn't the way you're going to go, you know? I'm not going this way, was what I said, right? And I know it has something to do with all the order I've been working on. Do you agree?
I do. Order is the first law of the universe. When, you know, if you look back in Genesis about how the universe was created, it was step by step. There was an order. And everything in the universe has an order. Every planet is in its own ordered space. And so we have to comply with the laws of nature in order to really tap into that universal wisdom and understanding and source that brings our vibration to a higher level. And order is the first law.
You know, I've had a number of people suggest to me that I could, at this point, return the Jeep and be better off. But you know how I feel about that Jeep.
Well, I don't think that anything that makes us happy has a place in our life.
Yeah, well, it scared me a couple of times pretty good, too. But what's really interesting is that what used to scare me about it in the beginning doesn't scare me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like somehow if you do what you love, you may get scared occasionally.
Right.
But if you keep going, there's something past all of that. And that's what I guess I wanted our listeners to know. It's like we'll start to do something. We'll start to do a task, and we may run into injury or disappointment or something of that nature. But if we don't do that task because we got afraid,
right,
we lose. So I want to thank you guys for listening to us today. You've been listening to Waking Up in America. This program is produced by our Kirkgaard Media Group, Radio Classrooms of America, and our radio partners, KoningCompany.com, Dr. James Murphy in memoriam, and our executive producer, Nathan Jett. And thanks to many of our guests and our chief technical officer, Pete Laubach. Thanks also to the radio team at Voice America, Denise and Ruben and Eric, and just all the people that make the show happen. And thank you also to Bent Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People. And next week, invite a friend to listen. And as Peter was saying today, we have to operate at our highest all the time, and we need to train ourselves to do that. And the one thing that I've noticed in the interviews with these Olympic champions, and I'm sure Gail has too, is that if they don't like the way they've done something, they just keep practicing and keep practicing and keep practicing. So you want to do something? Do it again. You fall off the horse, you get back on the horse. You get scared of the Jeep, you hop on the Jeep. The cape falls, pick it up and make a new recipe. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for you and me, and who we see when we see each other.